Well, this notion, which was so powerful in the Holy Roman Empire, was one way of reconciling this issue of spiritual and secular authority. But there were other ways of looking at it and looking at this relationship. And here we turn to the second part of this lecture, and that is what did the papacy see, and how did religious life in Europe change so that this image, going back to Charlemagne, which is resting on older Roman traditions, came under stress? Well, part of it originated really at a local level. Strange to say, as important as Western Europeans believed Rome and the papacy were, and throughout the Middle Ages, there's no question that Rome was always given this special rank, that the Pope was the spiritual father of all Christians. Nonetheless, churches had operated to a great extent as regional or local churches. They may have paid homage to the papacy in Rome, but they often ignored his directives, the directives of popes. Well, in 911, Duke William the Pious of Aquitaine gave to a group of Benedictine monks in his south-central French county of Mâcon a monastery of Cluny. And he endowed it extremely well. The abbot Birno took over and was going to make this monastery a model of Benedictine spirituality. Furthermore, in the grant, William specified that the monastery was to be outside of all lay interference. That is, no secular lord should interfere with the arrangements in the monastery, which is a very common feature across Western Europe, particularly in the Holy Roman Empire, but also in England and France, where very often powerful secular protectors regarded bishoprics, monasteries, nunneries as essentially their private property, and they interfered with the election of spiritual leaders, the admission of members to the clergy, handling of the monies. There were all sorts of possibilities of abuse. These abuses consisted of tolerating clerical, well, not marriage, but concubinage, simony, the sale of office, nepotism, appointing various types of members of your family not really qualified to hold the position. And these abuses were constantly a problem in the Western Church in the early Middle Ages. Well, Abbot Birno was going to change that. He was going to bring his monastery back to the model that St. Benedict of Nursia had preached back in late antiquity. And he succeeded. He succeeded not only so brilliantly, he and his monks went on to establish much of the liturgy, and in time, Cluny came to dominate a great deal of what was regarded as the medieval liturgy and service of the Western Church. Birno was followed by a succession of remarkable abbots. His immediate successor was St. Odo, who initiated efforts to reform other monasteries. Cluny received a series of papal bulls in its favor, where the papacy took the monastery directly under the control of the papacy. The most impressive situation is when Pope Leo VI invited St. Odo to come in and reform the leading monasteries in Rome. Well, over the course of the second half of the 10th and 11th century, Cluniac monks moved in and reformed or remodeled monasteries across Europe. It is estimated that in the time of Abbot Odilo, who died in 1048, and he had, from 999 to 1048, he was the abbot of Cluny, almost 50 years, that at least 1,450 monasteries were directly dependent on Cluny for their organization, the appointment of abbots, or in some way had been remodeled and restructured, spiritually rejuvenated by Cluny. The Cluniac monks reformed the liturgy, they perfected choral music, they created the very rich service we associate to this day with traditional Catholicism. It was their brilliant creation. And it is difficult to overstress the importance of Cluny. Abbots such as Odilo were European-wide figures. They exercised influence far beyond their boundaries, and Cluny, in many ways, was one of the leading international institutions in Western Europe. And as a result, it came to influence the halls of the cardinals in Rome itself.